beautiful day outside. And Ed was right. There's a lot of things that have been done yesterday. But one, a couple things you forgot to mention, Ed. I'm sure some young people probably took advantage of the time and stayed inside and played their video games. Yeah, big. Or watched some videos. Maybe somebody went to movies. I don't know. Not everybody loves being outside. And I got to tell you, I'm not a moviegoer, so yeah, I definitely didn't go to the movies. It's too expensive, and well, I've got other things to do. Matter of fact, I can't remember how many movies. It's very few movies I've ever attended over the years. But some of the movies, even the ones I didn't attend, I remember, and I remember one particular film from 2004. I didn't go. And the critics really didn't, some of them anyway, really didn't suggest that you go. Especially for children or teens, because see, it was really epic, really dark, brutal, emotionally draining, full of graphic violence. It was controversial, but also very successfully commercially, which is surprising because all the narrative of the narrative, none of it was in English. It was all subtitles. Any of you remember what that movie might be? What's that? Passion of the Christ. Beautiful Life. I did go to the movies to see it. Yeah. It was the Passion of the Christ. In it, with this movie, Mel Gibson, which surprised most of the world, was both the producer, the director, and co-writer for this. As a matter of fact, he put $25 million of his own money, dollars of his own money into this film. Shot mostly from a Roman Catholic perspective of the crucifixion. So it's not surprising it was in Latin, most of it. Most of the language was in Latin. Some of it in Aramaic. A little bit of Greek thrown in, some French, and some Hebrew. But what was all the controversy about? He really tried hard, I think, to put the emphasis on the amount of suffering that Christ went through. Thus, the image being so graphic, so epic, so brutal. I'm not going to endorse the film by any means. If you want to go see it, great. I mean, like I say, it was a highly successful. It's grossed $612.2 million thus far. And it's loosely based on the Gospel of John. But you see, as an evangelical, we often minimize the amount of sacrifice that God made on that cross. We look and, you know, we say, yeah, Jesus died on the cross for our salvation, and then we pass on to his risen from the dead. And that indeed is why Christ came. He came to conquer sin as a sacrifice and to conquer death. We, again, minimize that sacrifice. And Jesus died on that cross, went through the suffering for the sins of the world, yours, mine, everyone's. So this morning I want to take a little bit closer look at the crucifixion, and I'm going to tell you up front, I hadn't planned on going this deep into it. God has led me to it, and I have been trying to avoid it I felt like somewhat like Jonah trying to run as fast as I can anywhere but right where I am right now. But here I am. Not that you're my Nineveh by any means, but I'm reluctant to do this. But this is what God has asked me to do. So we're going to take a little bit closer look at the cross. And you'll probably remember all the details about the crucifixion and everything else. But I do want you to pay attention to some of the minor characters as well. And we'll be getting into those in a minute. When we look at John chapters 18 and 19, for those of you in the red Bibles, that's on chapter 18 starts on page 1680, we find that Jesus suffered beyond what we can even comprehend. The punishment he took was horrendous. And one might ask, why did he go through that much? Well, yeah, he loved us. Yes, I understand that. But why did he suffer that much? When you think about it, it's because of sin. Our sin. The world's sin. He took it on, and there is no appropriate place that that isn't a brutal, dirty place. Sin is ugly. So we're going to find that Jesus, we're going to talk a little bit about what he went through, and then we're going to talk about a couple of minor people, and there are going to be some surprises. And it will be some acts of courage as well. So stay tuned for that as well. Again, I said Jesus came as to conquer death and to be a sacrifice as for our sin and conquer that sin. And it had to be ugly. It had to be brutal. The process of a person being crucified was not invented by the Romans, actually, but they perfected the process. It's designed not just to put through a person through physical pain and for them to die a slow and painful death, but also to humiliate, to embarrass and humiliate the person. These crucifixions took place in public, and they were usually reserved for murderers and people who led rebellions or insurrections. People with the serious crimes, although the Romans apparently also rented out their services to slave owners who wanted to punish their slaves or make examples of them as well. Like I say, they perfected it. The prisoner was usually stripped, whipped, and flogged to the point of near death. A couple more whomps, couple more licks, they would have died from those wounds. And then they're forced to carry in most cases, carry a rough-hewn timber that was the cross member for that cross. Not the whole cross. Two reasons for that, I suppose. First, it probably would have been really heavy and too much for somebody who's nearly dead to carry. But also, psychological. Because the main post for that cross was already stood in place, usually in a higher plane so that it could be seen. And that prisoner had to carry that while suffering, not just from his wounds from the flogging, but all the splinters and the dirt and the grime and everything else, while looking at that, where he was going to end up. Think of the emotional and psychological toll that would take. And as I said, it would take place in a public place where people frequented, whether it be an intersection on a road where apparently this could have been or would have been, as is rumored to have been, or somewhere else close to where people were there, visible. They're on display as an example. Don't mess with the Romans or else. Or else what? You're going to suffer. You're going to die, and you're going to die miserably. So when the prisoner finally was up to the place of execution, they're laid on their back, the arms forced out, over that cross member they just carried up, and their arms were either nailed to that cross member or tied. Then they're hefted into place, lifted into place, suspended by only their arms. Very little, if any, hold to try to relieve the weight on those arms. And as their strength began to wane, they started to sag down, and their chest would be forced closed. And eventually, they die of asphyxiation. Now, picture it. It's a dark, it's a dirty, it's a barren, it's an ugly place. Men writhing in pain, screaming in pain, pleading for mercy, convulsions as they try to keep themselves suspended enough to be able to breathe, and eventually losing their strength and suffocating. It's not only a visual picture, but think about an emotional. But think about even such the smell. See, the Romans usually, and we'll find it's not the case here, usually left the victims up on that cross to rot. As an example again. And the decaying bodies and the blood and the body fluids everywhere. Can you imagine? Our Savior going through all that, an innocent man, innocent, dying and suffering for the guilty, for you and I. Isaiah, speaking of the Savior to come, described the severity of that whipping that he endured, saying, as making a form marred beyond human likeness. That alone was more for me, more than I can comprehend. And that was in Isaiah 52:19, by the way. But in spite of that, all that physical and emotional, I think there was a punishment far worse for Jesus. You see, because he took on our sin, he was abandoned by his Father, Jesus. For a time there, he was separated from God. And I believe that was far worse for him. If you want to look at that, as in Mark 15, where he said, "Why have you abandoned me," basically. I believe that is far worse. So, enough of my rambling. Let's look at the scriptures for a minute. And again, we're in John chapter 18. Now, Jesus had been betrayed. He'd been taken before Pilate. He'd talked to Pilate a couple of times already. I believe Pilate actually tried to declare him not guilty and free him at least four times that I can count. But every time people came back. And in chapter 18, verse 37, you are a king then, said Pilate. Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent me my arrest by the Jewish leaders. But now my kingdom is from another place." Pilate said, "You're a king then?" Okay. Wow. He acknowledged that he was a king. Jesus said, "You say that I'm a king. In fact, the reason I was born and came into this world is to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me." And Pilate responds, "What is the truth?" He retorted with this. He went out and again talked to the Jews gathered and said, "I find no basis for a charge against him. But it is your custom for me to release to you one prisoner at the time of the Passover. Do you want me to release the king of the Jews?" You and I, well, obviously would have said, "Yes, yeah, free Jesus." They didn't. They shouted back, "No, not him. Give us Barabbas." Barabbas. Now, Barabbas was a prisoner. He had been taken in an uprising, and he had murdered people as and part of that uprising. He was justified to be there. But they're saying, "Give me Jesus. Give us Jesus. Crucify him and give us Barabbas, set him free." It's a miracle for Barabbas. Oh, that's cool. Miracle for him, but Jesus should be there. And he was not acting as a replacement. He was a substitute for him. He went to that cross for him. He went to that cross for you. For me. I don't know what happened to Barabbas after this point, but I believe that he was eternally grateful. And if there's anyone that would be tend to turn to Christ, Barabbas would probably be an individual. But I don't know. All right, we go on to John chapter 19 and verse 16. Oh no, let's look at 1 and 6, because I think this is important to us as well. Then Pilate took Jesus and had him flogged. The soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and pulled it on his head. They clothed him in a purple robe and went up to him again and again, saying, "Hail, King of the Jews!" And they slapped him in the face. once more Pilate came out and said to the Jews gathered there, "Look, I'm bringing him out to let you know that I find no basis for a charge against him." The soldiers went through the flogging, but he also gave him a robe. Sarcasm, yes, I'm sure. Put it on his back, already scarred and marred and bleeding. And later they pulled that robe, partially adhered to his back, straight off. Even more pain. We go on and to John chapter 19, 16 through 20. Finally, Pilate handed him over to them to be crucified. So the soldiers took charge of Jesus, carrying his own cross. Again, that was the cross member, probably. He went out to the place of the skull, which is in Aramaic called Golgotha. There they crucified him, and with him two others, one on each side, with Jesus in the middle. Pilate had a notice prepared and fastened to the cross. It read, "Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews." Many of the Jews read this sign, for the place where Jesus was crucified was near the city, and the sign was written in Aramaic, Latin, and Greek. See a basis for the language in the movie? In addition to being Roman Catholic, this is also scriptural. Again, a public place. King of the Jews. An example of what happens to people who rebel against the Roman Empire. Jesus went through all this again for us. And if we read further down in John 19, 28. Later, knowing that every thing had now been finished and so the scripture would be filled, Jesus said, "I am thirsty." A jar of white wine vinegar was there, so they soaked a sponge in it, put it in the sponge on a stalk of hyssop plant, and lifted it to Jesus' lips. When he had received the drink, Jesus said, "It is finished." And with that, he bowed his head and gave up his spirit. This is by about 3 in the afternoon, pretty early by most standards. Jesus died. That burden of that sin and that guilt and that shame he bore for us. Conquered. A sacrifice for us. Now it was the day of preparation, and the next day was to be a special Sabbath because the Jewish leaders did not want the bodies left on the crosses during the Sabbath. They asked Pilate to have the legs broken and the bodies taken. Well, they found that Jesus had already died. They didn't need to do that because they broke the legs so that they couldn't get purchase on that cross, remember, to lift themselves up. Jesus didn't need to be his legs broken. Instead, they took a spear and drove through his side to confirm that he was dead. That body took the spear for us. Okay. He's down. You know, he's done the sacrifice. He's been substituted for Barabbas, substituted for us. He dies. Instead of being sitting there to, you know, suspended there, he is taken down. Unusual, but it happened. Of course, for a reason, it was part of God's design. And let's look at John chapter 19. You don't know for no matter how far back I get. 38. Later, Joseph of Arimathea asked Pilate for the body of Jesus. Now, Joseph was a disciple of Jesus, but secretly because he feared the Jewish leaders. With Pilate's permission, he came and took the body away. A secret disciple. Joseph was apparently a wealthy man, a member of the Sanhedrin, the ruling class, on a council with the high priests and others. And he was a believer, but he came forth now out of secret to tend and to care for the body of Jesus. Would it be a time that you and I would choose to? I mean, you'd want him to have ascended to his throne or something before you acknowledge, but not in the middle of all this violence and this chaos and this ugliness. That was an act of courage, people, to stand and say, you know, to come forth out of secret and to serve the Lord. It was an act of courage. I think of all the times where I, and maybe you can identify with this, have been a secret follower of Jesus, a secret disciple, where I've had an opportunity to say, yes, I follow Jesus, and you should too, and here's the reason. Joseph came out in circumstances, under circumstances the average person wouldn't do. He obviously loved him and was devoted to him. If we go on, it says, he was accompanied by Nicodemus, the man who earlier had visited Jesus at night. Nicodemus brought a mixture of myrrh and aloe, about 75 pounds. Taking Jesus' body, the two of them wrapped it with the spices and stripes, and with the spices and strips of linen. This was in accordance with Jewish burial custom. At the place where Jesus was crucified, there was a garden, and in the garden, a new tomb, which no one had ever been laid. Remember Nicodemus comes to Jesus in the night, and he has this conversation about being born again, and he's questioning Jesus, going, how in the world can you be born again? You can't possibly crawl back into your mother's womb and be born again. And ladies, be thankful for that, honestly. Somewhere along the line, he became a believer. And he stood up to before the Sanhedrin when they were discussing killing Jesus, and they said, and he stood up and said, hey, I'm reminding you guys, you can't do that without him being able to speak. Of course, they didn't pay attention to Nicodemus, but he did stand up. And then he goes with Joseph of Arimathea to provide a proper burial for Jesus. And not only that, he bought the supplies. Expensive, beyond expensive, to have done this. There's a couple things about this too, besides this, if that's so expensive and the fact that they did this in spite of the circumstances, they came out of secret to do this. The whole world knew they were followers of Jesus. They were probably going to lose their prestige, maybe some of their income, and be chastised and possibly thrown out of their society. But they loved Jesus enough that they did this. And this preparation, by the way, was usually carried out by either a servant or the women, not the men, and certainly not the wealthy ones. But they did. I think sometimes in our life, we find that God has called us for something that we're a little uncomfortable with. And when you step forward, you're still a little uncomfortable, but God will eventually give you the direction, the strength, and the courage to step forward. And I'm encouraging you to follow their example of Joseph and Nicodemus. Because they stood up, because they came out of hiding, because they had the courage to do so, they can be an example to us. So in conclusion, I want to say this, and I know I'm short, but it's a lot to absorb. Remember as we go through Easter that the power of the resurrection is why we can live victorious today. But the power of that cross is the reason we can stand before God unaccused, sin-free today. Both very power beyond comprehension. And we need to remember that. We also need to remember that Jesus was our substitute. We could have just as easily and should have been on that cross. He was there instead. He went through the flogging, the whipping, the humiliation in our place. And remember to have the courage to step up when times are uncomfortable. Trust God. He will take care of things because he will. He always does.